Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Dion Gordon Podcast. Now, I'm your host, the connoisseur of common sense, the purveyor of authenticity, the man who calls it right down the middle, Dion Tyre Gordon. Enough of the bullshit. Let's get to work. Let's talk basketball. And there's plenty to talk about. A lot of things have transpired in the past 48 hours in the National Basketball Association. I don't even know where to begin. I mean, we could talk about Game 5 of the Nets and Bucks series when KD went crazy at 49 and 48 minutes, a 49-point triple-double. Of course, Giannis and Middleton and Lopez and Holiday and the rest of the cast came back in Game 6, got a victory, even up three games apiece. Game 7 on Saturday, that series is still going. We could talk about CP3 testing positive for COVID, allegedly, reportedly. We could talk about Kawhi Leonard's torn ACL, allegedly, reportedly. Being called right now by the Clippers, a knee sprain, but there is some speculation there's a torn ACL. Stan Van Gundy fired by the New Orleans Pelicans today. Scott Brooks parted ways with the Washington Wizards. Donnie Nelson and Rick Carlisle are no longer in Dallas, much to the chagrin of Luka Doncic. The Philadelphia 76ers shit the bed, blew a 26-point lead versus the Atlanta Hawks in Game 5 of that second-round semifinal NBA playoff series. Playoff P, Paul George to the rescue. No Kawhi Leonard, no problem. PG leads the way for a Clipper victory in Game 5 of the series versus the Utah Jazz. Now the Clippers have a 3-2 lead with an opportunity to go to their first ever Western Conference Final if they can emerge victorious in Game 6 at Staples Center. Zion Williamson's family apparently is upset and wants him out of New Orleans. Can you blame them? Zion's been in the league 2 years, has already had two different coaches, Alvin Gentry his rookie season, and the aforementioned Stan Van Gundy, who was just fired yesterday. And finally, LeBron James gives his opinion about NBA injuries, whether anybody wanted to hear it or not. If he can't participate in the NBA playoffs as a player because the Los Angeles Lakers were eliminated in the first round in 6 games by the Phoenix Suns, LeBron James will still make his presence felt in the NBA playoffs with an endless amount of tweets and commercials about Space Jam 2 coming out this summer. There's a lot to talk about. I'm going to start by talking about the injuries. Man, this sucks. The NBA, basketball in general, but the NBA first and foremost, has always been predicated about the individual superstar, about the individual player. They've always sold that more than any other sport. You don't tune into a Laker game. You tune in to watch LeBron and AD play. You're not watching the Trailblazers. You're watching Lillard and McCollum. You don't sit down and look at a Golden State Warrior game. You're watching Stephen Curry. You don't really care about the Brooklyn Nets. You care about Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving. You're not really that big of a fan of the Milwaukee Bucks. You just like Giannis Antetokounmpo. The NBA, more than any other sport, is about the individual player and the superstar. That's who's promoted. That's who's pushed. That's who's advertised more than anything else in the sport. Football, in so many ways, is the ultimate team sport because football teams will get advertised. People will go watch the Green Bay Packers regardless who's playing quarterback for them. It could be Aaron Rodgers. It could be Jordan Love. It doesn't matter. The Packers are still going to sell out. They're still going to be the Packers. They're still going to be focused on, and still going to be attention paid to them in some capacity. In football, you have signature iconic teams. You have an abundance of signature iconic teams that people will go watch regardless who's playing for them, what's going on with them, even how bad their win-loss record is. Teams like the Giants, the Cowboys, the 49ers, the Steelers, the Packers, the Raiders can change towns and still have a loyal fan base that will follow them regardless. They can play in Oakland, they can go to L.A., they can come back to Oakland, they can go to Las Vegas, they can go to Canada and play in Saskatchewan, they can go to Frederick, Maryland, they can go to Sheboygan, Wisconsin, they can go to El Paso, Texas, they can go to Las Cruces, New Mexico, they can go to parts unknown, they can go to Death Valley, they can go to the mean streets of Greenwich, Connecticut. It doesn't matter. People are going to follow the Raiders regardless wherever they play at because they are a signature franchise. And there are a number, an abundance of signature franchises in the National Football League. In the NBA, there's only two. There's the LA Lakers. There's the Boston Celtics. Everyone else is kind of on equal footing. Well, somewhat equal footing. Some teams are a little bit above, a little bit below. Like the Orlando Magic. No one gives a fuck about them. They have to have a superstar. They have to have a Shaq, a Penny, a Dwight Howard. Someone like that that you're going to watch and pay attention to on their team, or else you don't give a fuck about them. The Denver Nuggets are the same way. They have to have a Jamal Murray, a Nikola Jokic. The Minnesota Timberwolves have to have a Kevin Garnett. The San Antonio Spurs have to have a Tim Duncan, a David Robinson, a Tony Parker, a Manu Ginobili. If certain teams don't have star individual players, no one gives a fuck about them because the NBA, more than any other sport, puts the onus on the individual player. I live in Oakland, California, in the California Bay Area. home of the Golden State Warriors. I've been out there since 2016. I cannot tell you the amount of Warrior fans I've met who have told me, you should have been out here 5 or 10 years ago. You could literally walk into a game. They couldn't give tickets away to a Warrior game. My homeboy told me he went to a Warriors-Laker game in 2010. It was about 80% Laker fans in the building, wearing purple and gold Kobe Bryant jerseys, cheering him on, rooting against the home team Golden State Warriors. But now, since they got good in the Steph Curry era and won a championship in 2015 and won two more after that, now everyone out here has jumped on the bandwagon. They're Golden State Warrior fans. Nationwide, there are a bunch of Golden State Warrior fans. Growing up in Frederick, Maryland, I never encountered a Golden State Warrior fan. I wasn't sure they even existed. I'm sure there were some people who were fans of Mitch Richmond and Chris Mullin and Tim Hardaway and Monte Ellis and Baron Davis and guys like that. Michael Petras, I guess. I never met any of them. Anton Jameson, Gilbert Arenas played for the Warriors back in the day. I never met anyone. I never saw anyone that was a Warrior fan until I came out here and they started winning. When I came out here, it coincided with them winning championships and being a dominant team. But they had star players. They have Stephen Curry. They had Kevin Durant for a couple of years. Klay Thompson, to a lesser extent, Draymond Green. They had star players. That's why people started paying attention to the Golden State Warriors. The NBA is about the superstars. So imagine what happens to the NBA product when the individual superstar is gone from a lot of teams during your NBA playoffs due to injury. Kawhi Leonard hobbling around with a sprained knee. In the same series, his opponent, the Utah Jazz, are without Michael Conley, and Donovan Mitchell's hobbling around on a bum ankle. I see Trae Young with an ice pack on his shoulder every game. He's playing through it, but every game I keep seeing him with the ice pack on his shoulder. The Brooklyn Nets, Kyrie Irving down with a sprained ankle last Sunday in game four, James Harden. Not quite himself, limping around with a bad hamstring injury. No explosion, no lift. Looked like he was afraid to get out and transition a few times because he wanted to conserve his body and didn't want to risk injuring that hammy even further. He can't really go to the basket. He's settling for a lot of step-back threes, more so than usual. Joel Embiid has a torn meniscus. He's limping around on one leg. As I mentioned earlier, Chris Paul on the COVID-19 list out indefinitely. Can Chris Paul catch a break in the playoffs? There's no player in these NBA playoffs I'm rooting for more than Chris Paul. I sincerely want to see the Phoenix Suns at least get to the NBA Finals. He deserves this. He's been in the league for a long time, been a great player, a top 10 point guard of all time, the point god, the definition of a floor general, a consummate pro, a guy who has made every team he's ever gone to better, whether it be New Orleans, whether it be the Clippers, the Rockets, the Oklahoma City Thunder last year. The Phoenix Suns are in the playoffs and in the Western Conference Finals for the first time in 10 years because largely due in part to the addition of Chris Paul. Even his backups get better. I mean, look how well Cameron Payne has played this year. So it's unfortunate that CP3 is on the COVID list. You hope it's not for too long. You hope he can participate and help his team in the Western Conference Finals. He deserves this. Like I said, the guy's been snake bitten by injuries and bad luck and the playoffs throughout his entire career. Go back to 2018 with the Houston Rockets versus the Golden State Warriors. They had Golden State down 3-2 in that series. They had the Warriors under pressure in that series. And then Chris Paul hurt his hamstring and really couldn't play at all the rest of the series in Game 6 and 7, and Golden State was able to win those games and advance in the NBA Finals where they swept the Cleveland Cavaliers that year. But you got to think, you got to wonder, what would have happened if Chris Paul didn't get hurt in that series? That's just one of those things that people are always going to wonder about and discuss. So for Chris Paul's sake, and for the sake of basketball, for the good of the game, you hope that Chris Paul can find his way back and not be on the COVID list too long. You go back to the first round playoff series, a team the Phoenix Suns defeated in the NBA playoffs first round. My beloved Los Angeles Lakers, the complexion of that series changed once Anthony Davis was injured. The Lakers were up 2-1. And then AD injured his groin in game four, and Phoenix won games 4, 5, and 6 and closed the series out. Games 5 and 6 were complete destruction. Lakers got their asses handed to them. Once AD went out, LeBron quit, in my eyes. That's just me calling what I see. Once Anthony Davis went down and couldn't play the rest of the series, he tried to come back heroically, trying to come back in Game 6. I give him nothing but credit for this. I give him all the credit in the world for attempting to come back. But once you saw him on the court in Game 6, within like 30 seconds, you knew instantly, this guy shouldn't be out here right now. He can barely move. That groin is fucked up. He can't play. He is not Anthony Davis right now. He's not 100%. He's not himself. So he tried to come back, tried to give it a go, didn't work, and the Lakers lost. And to me, once AD limped off the floor in game 4, LeBron James packed it in and said, fuck it, Who cares about this shit anyway? I won a championship last year at bogus, fraudulent COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic made for TV Black Lives Matter, sponsored by Disney and ABC Championship. That gimmick WWE Vince McMahon title the Lakers won last year. I'm a Laker fan saying this, by the way. As far as I'm concerned, the Lakers haven't won a title since 2010. That bullshit last year doesn't count. But it looked to me like LeBron said, I won a chip last year for y'all. We dedicated it to Kobe. I got one championship. Fuck it. Now, I'm 36. I need time off. I'm in year 18. This dude is out. I know this is my sidekick. I manufactured a deal to bring him out here, where we gave up 4 first-round picks and mortgaged the future for this guy who has a history of being hurt and getting injured all the time, this walking MRI, and we bring him out here. We gave up the future for this dude. Got one championship out of it. That should be good enough. That was what LeBron's play and demeanor conveyed to me as I sat down and watched him on television play. You can agree, you can disagree. I know the LeBron sexuals. I know the stands out there. I know the grown men who refer to LeBron as king, who probably didn't have a father in their life, but I digress. I know y'all going to be upset hearing me say shit like this. Truthfully, I don't care. I just call what I see. But the point is, a lot of injuries in these NBA playoffs, a lot of star marquee players that you want to see, a lot of guys who are promoted by the league are injured or unavailable and couldn't participate in the NBA playoffs or can't currently participate in the NBA playoffs. Even before the playoffs started, Jaylen Brown for Boston went down, couldn't play in that first round series versus Brooklyn. Jamal Murray back in April tore his ACL versus Golden State. So you've had a litany of injuries all season long, and this has led to the aforementioned LeBron James offering his 2 cents on the matter. LeBron took to social media the other day to say, quote, "They all didn't want to listen to me about the start of the season. I knew exactly what would happen. I only wanted to protect the well-being of the players, which ultimately is the product and benefit of our game," all caps. These injuries isn't just part of the game. It's the lack of pure rim rest before starting back up. 8, possibly 9 All-Stars have missed playoff games, most in league history. This is the best time of the year for our league and fans, but missing a ton of our favorite players, it's insane. If there's one person that knows about the body and how it works all year round, it's me. I speak for the health of all of our players, and I hate to see this many injuries this time of the year. Sorry, fans. Wish you guys were seeing all of your favorite guys right now. End quote. Now, this is very nuanced. This is very complicated. First and foremost, I agree with what LeBron is saying. I agree with his overall sentiment. They rushed into this season on the heels of last year's COVID-19 season in the bubble down in Orlando and everything. That season ended in October. This current season started in early to mid-December. They tried to condense 72 games into a shortened schedule, a lot of back-to-backs, some games 3 nights in a row. It's going to physically take a toll on the players in the league. And as I've been saying this entire podcast, your individual players, most notably your stars, are the biggest selling point in the league. The league does not sell teams. They sell individual stars. So when you try to do this, you try to rush this season through, you're going to have the myriad of injuries and physical ailments that you've had. The Miami Heat had a bunch of injuries and guys on COVID-19 list all season long. They were the team who played against the Lakers in last year's NBA Finals. The Lakers were beleaguered by injuries all season long. LeBron went down with an ankle injury. AD had an assortment of injuries all year. You know, the entire season, the Lakers at one point were a number 2 seed, and next thing you know, they're fighting for their lives in the play-in game versus the Golden State Warriors just to get the number 7 seed. So injuries definitely hurt the Lakers all season long. So LeBron overall has a point. The problem is the messenger. The problem is the guy expressing and conveying the point. LeBron James is probably the most polarizing athlete in all of sports. If you mention LeBron's name, it's going to get a visceral reaction out of people. Some people like him, some people hate him, some people love him. You know, LeBron's kind of like Tom Brady. If you mention their name, people are going to react in some capacity, either for or against them. But when LeBron says these things, even there is truth, there's a lot of truth to what he's saying. But people just don't like LeBron, so they automatically dismiss it. They don't want to hear it, and they think it's just him crying and, you know, being an asshole and just complaining and trying to usurp the attention of the NBA playoffs and bringing it on himself or whatever. Some people just don't like LeBron, so they ain't trying to hear what he got to say about anything, especially now that the Lakers have lost and he's off the stage. They just want LeBron to fade to the background, just go away, Shut the fuck up. We'll see you again when Space Jam 2 come out or when next season starts. But right now, it's about other people. You got some folks out there who are a part of the Laura Ingram, Sean Hannity, Tucker Carlson crowd, a.k.a. the Shut Up and Dribble crowd, who want LeBron to do exactly that. Just shut up and dribble and be grateful that the white man allows you to dribble a basketball and make millions of dollars in this country. Just shut the fuck up. Know your place. That's that crowd. And there's people, there's a lot of people out there who feel that way about any black athlete, but about LeBron in general. So LeBron really can't win with anything he says to the public, the social media, whatever. LeBron's not going to win, even if he is speaking truth. I agree with him. Like I said, I think this season starting so quickly after the conclusion of last season has contributed to a number of injuries through wear and tear, through attrition, and has worn these brothers down because of the amount of games they had to play in a condensed amount of time. There was only 72 days from the conclusion of last season to the beginning of this season. Typically, in the NBA offseason, there's somewhere between 127 and 156 days off from the end of one season to the beginning of another. This year, because of the pandemic fucked everything up, they had a very quick turnaround, quicker than normal, quicker than what they're accustomed to. So a lot of guys' bodies just didn't adjust. If you were on a playoff team in last year's bubble and you played, so I would say the second round on, you were severely compromised. You look at the four teams who played in the conference finals in the bubble last year. The Lakers, Heat, Celtics, and Nuggets. Three out of four of those teams struggled with injuries all season and never looked right all season. The Lakers, Miami, and Boston were all kind of up and down all year. And then Denver had their second-best player go down with a blown-out ACL in April. So all four of those teams were compromised coming into the season. That's just my opinion. So, yes, LeBron, I think, is on to something. I'm not LeBron's biggest fan, but if LeBron speaks some truth every now and then, hey, a broken clock is right twice a day. As a matter of fact, LeBron's been consistent in this. He didn't just say this the other day just to be saying it. He's been saying this since the deal was made to resume the season, to start the season on December 22nd. After the players' union voted to approve the league's plan for a December 22nd start with 72 regular season games, LeBron used a facepalm emoji to respond to the prospect of a chopped-in-half offseason. In early December, James told the LA Times of his initial reaction to the news, quote, "Being completely honest, I wasn't expecting that because the early conversations that were going on, I was hearing it would kind of be a mid-January start and training camp would kind of start after Christmas," end quote. So that was LeBron's quote to the LA Times as reported by Yahoo Sports. I'm sorry, the Washington Post. So LeBron's been consistent in all this. He's not just saying this now because his team got beat in the first round. I know that's going to be the popular public perception that LeBron's is crying over spilled milk, but to his credit, he's been consistent in his stance against this quick turnaround and shortened season. Now we have to ask the question, were injuries up this season dramatically or did it just seem that way? Were the injuries this season worse than previous seasons or was that just the way it came across? Well, according to ESPN's Kevin Pelton, the average number of players sidelined per game due to injury, not due to any COVID-19 protocol issues or rest, was 5.1. That is the highest that figure has ever been since it started being tracked back in the 2009-2010 season. The last previous record was 4.8, which means that injuries were up across the board at about 5%. It's worse for the league's top players, too. Also, according to ESPN, this season's All-Stars missed 19% of games, which is the highest percentage in a single season in league history. On average, All-Stars missed 13.7 regular season games each. So there you have it. There is statistical merit and validation to what LeBron is saying and to also what I'm saying. The numbers back it up. There were more injuries this season than there were in the past few seasons. However, the blame for this would go to the actual players themselves, or at least the Players Association. They agreed to this. The NBA, the Owners Association, the league itself, has this very big, lucrative deal with the television networks, with TNT, ESPN, and ABC, to broadcast these games. And they had to broadcast a certain amount of games to get the amount of money, the max amount of money they were going to get from these TV deals. So the players went along with it. They capitulated and they agreed to this because at the end of the day, cash rules everything around me. Cream get the money. It's all about the bottom line at the end of the day, no matter what happens on this earth, but especially in the National Basketball Association or any professional sports league. Basketball is a game. The NBA is a business. And the players are not going to get the amount of money they want to get, they're accustomed to getting, if they don't play a certain amount of games. If you play 56 games, you're not going to make that much money. You play 65 games, you're not going to make that much money. 72 is close to 82 and close enough. So Yes, the players are getting hurt more at a higher percentage than recent years because of the season being what it is, but it's also partly their fault. That's probably the best way I can summarize and analyze the whole situation. It sucks, but at the end of the day, y'all agreed to this, so not too much sympathy can really be had. I hate to see players get hurt, especially great players like Kawhi Leonard and Kyrie Irving and, you know, Joel Embiid and guys like that, Donovan Mitchell, all these guys who are banged up and hurt right now, Jamal Murray going out during the season. I hate seeing all that. But at the end of the day, when the money talked, y'all listened and y'all gave in to the owners and played 72 games, and now you got to deal with the consequences. It is what it is. Moving on, Eastern Conference playoffs. Two series still going on. One has now been pushed to a game seven. That would be the Milwaukee Bucks and the Brooklyn Nets. Milwaukee was able to come out with a victory tonight. Philadelphia, as I said earlier, shit the bed in game five. I don't know what the fuck happened to them. That typically happens to teams in the state of Georgia. I would expect the Hawks to blow a 26-point lead, following in the footsteps of their football brethren in the same town, the Atlanta Falcons, blowing a big-ass lead with 2.5 to go in the third quarter. But for once, they keep defying my whole Atlanta and Georgia stipulation that I always put out. They keep defying it. I feel like it's going to catch up to them eventually. But they keep defying the whole stigma about teams from the state of Georgia who just shit the bed and choke and fail and come up short in the most inopportune times. The Hawks erase a 26-point deficit and will have Game 6 at home in the ATL at State Farm Arena. I want to talk about two players in particular in these series. I want to talk about Ben Simmons and Giannis Antetokounmpo. With all due respect to these brothers, I don't want this to come across a certain way, but goddammit, I just got to call what I see. These two guys are reflective of what I call the most overrated era of NBA basketball. You watch TV, you listen to experts and pundits and media analysts, and they will tell you all the time, over and over again, incessantly, that this is the most skilled era of NBA basketball we've ever seen. So explain to me why we have a multiple-time All-Star point guard who is shooting 22 of 67 from the free throw line this postseason, 32.8, went 4 for 14 in a Game 5 loss to the Atlanta Hawks. He is shooting worse than Shaquille O'Neal in Miami in 2006. That's the next lowest percentage. Shaq was shooting 37.4% for the Miami Heat in 2006. Now, the Heat ended up winning a championship that year anyway, but I digress. We have a point guard in what is supposed to be the most skilled era of NBA basketball anyone's ever seen. We have a point guard who is shooting free throws at 33%. We have a two-time former NBA League MVP who can barely dribble a basketball. We have a two-time former League MVP who has no go-to moves whatsoever. As a basketball fan, what really has always drawn me into watching basketball is the skill, the technique, the artistry, the overall craftsmanship. There's a certain level of improvisation in basketball, a certain level of creativity, fluidity in watching basketball. It's poetry in motion. I like to see skilled basketball players. Kobe Bryant is my second favorite basketball player of all time. The late, great Kobe Bryant, our dear ancestor Kobe Bean Bryant. And Kobe, to me, is the most skilled basketball player I've ever seen. Jordan's the greatest player I've ever seen. Kobe, to me, is a close second. But Kobe, I think, overall was more skilled than Michael Jordan was. There's multiple compilation videos on YouTube solely about Kobe Bryant's footwork. That's how great he was. That's how skilled and talented he was as a basketball player. So when I sit down to watch a basketball game, that's what I want to see. When people on television tell me that certain players are so great and incredible, and this is the most skilled era of basketball we've ever seen, and everyone on the court is playing with a high level of skill you've never seen before, and players from the 80s and 90s and early 2000s couldn't hold a candle to the modern day basketball player. When I hear people say these things, and then I tune in to watch an NBA playoff game, and I see a two-time league MVP trying to put moves on Blake Griffin, who's never been known as an elite defender, I see Giannis Antetokounmpo going between his legs, trying to make a move, trying to look impressive. I don't know what the fuck he's trying to do. Trying to get to the basket, I guess, on Blake Griffin. And he realizes it fails, so he resets, takes a few steps backwards, go to his patented move of getting a running start towards the rim and trying to bulldoze his way to the basket. And even that doesn't work. In the most skilled era of NBA basketball anyone's ever seen, allegedly, reportedly, that's what people say. This is the most skilled era of basketball anyone's ever seen. We have a two-time league MVP who takes about 15 to 20 seconds to attempt a free throw, and he also cannot shoot free throws. What the fuck is going on in our NBA right now? I'm going to tell you right now, I'm actively rooting against the Philadelphia 76ers and Milwaukee Bucks to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. I want nothing to do with that particular Eastern Conference Final. Hell no. Get that the fuck out of here. Like I said, I enjoy watching skilled basketball players. I do not want to see an Eastern Conference Final where we have one dude who can barely dribble versus another dude who shoots worse from the free throw line than Shaquille O'Neal does. For the good of basketball, for the good of humanity, for my own personal sanity as a basketball fan, I do not want to see a Philadelphia-Milwaukee Eastern Conference Final. I'm rooting for the Atlanta Hawks and the Brooklyn Nets to win their respective series and play each other in the Eastern Conference Final because Kevin Durant has skill. You saw that in Game 5. You saw the full repertoire, the entire arsenal, his whole bag of tricks on full display in Game 5 and an absolutely incandescent performance. 49 points in 48 minutes, like 17 rebounds, 10 assists, 49-point triple-double. Everyone going into that game said KD is not capable of carrying a basketball team. No Kyrie Irving, a hobbled and limited James Harden. And yet, KD answered the call. He answered the challenge. He did what a superstar is supposed to do. Put the team on his back and showed you my entire arsenal of weapons on full display as he kicked the Milwaukee Bucks' ass. And not only is Giannis a fraud on offense, he's also a fraud on defense. This guy is a former Defensive Player of the Year, and yet he repeatedly ducks the fade in terms of guarding Kevin Durant. 6'5" PJ Tucker, for the most part, has been tasked with guarding 6'11", 7 feet tall Kevin Durant throughout the majority of this series. Now, I understand you really can't put Giannis on KD the entire game. They're going to run him off screens. They're going to beat him up and wear him down physically and take away from what he does on offense. Similar to what you saw in the first round with the Clippers and the Mavericks, where everyone kept clamoring for Kawhi Leonard to lock up Luka Doncic. Same thing. You really can't guard Luka the entire game. It's going to wear him down and take away from what he does offensively. But in the fourth quarter, when this dude is actively kicking your team's ass, you're the former Defensive Player of the Year. You have to step up and accept that challenge. You got to answer that call. Overall, I look at Giannis and I look at Ben and I see two media creations. I see two guys that the media really wants the public to accept and like. They keep telling people over and over again, these guys are the future of the league. This guy's a two-time former league MVP. The other guy's a rookie of the year. These guys are going to be the faces of the NBA one day. They're going to win championships. They're going to be this. They're going to be that. Neither one of them can barely play basketball. If they weren't the height and size that they are, they wouldn't be in the league right now. I'm sorry. It might come across as hate. I'm just calling it what I see. I see a dude who can barely dribble a basketball, can't shoot free throws, has no go-to moves whatsoever, an alleged defensive player of the year who won't guard the other team's best player as he's cooking the shit out of you in a playoff game you need to win. I'm sorry. I look at you as a media creation. Now, when I'm watching the Philadelphia 76ers try to hold on to a 26-point lead down the stretch and it's withering away and it appears as if they're about to lose and the entire building is anxious and nervous and on the edge of their seat and wondering, is my team going to collapse? And somebody has to step to the forefront and make some buckets and make some plays to keep the Hawks at bay. And I see Seth Curry rising to the occasion. Not Steph, Seth Curry, his brother, who's a good player in his own right. I love Seth Curry. I love both Seth and Steph. I appreciate guys like Seth Curry because nothing in his NBA career came easy. He's been a journeyman. He's had to bounce around from different teams over the years. He's had to earn his spot in the league. I appreciate guys like that. So I'm a big fan of Seth Curry. But my point is Seth Curry is not the biggest star on that team. He's not even the second biggest star on that team. It's supposed to be Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. That's what the media keeps telling me are going to be the next great duo, the next great combination in the NBA to go win multiple championships throughout the years. Trust the process. The 76ers are going to be a dynasty on the backs of Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. So when they're in a big playoff game and they're fighting for their lives to preserve the lead and keep the road team at bay and hold on and win this game and get one step further to the Eastern Conference Finals, and I see a journeyman role player balling and putting in work and helping carry the team as opposed to the all-star point guard, I got to look at him sideways. I got to look at Ben Simmons and give him the side eye. Seth Curry and the real star of the team, Joel Embiid, they came to work. They did what they're supposed to do. They pretty much scored all the points for the 76ers in the second half of that game versus the Atlanta Hawks. Ben Simmons was like reparations for black people, nowhere to be found. He was bricking foul shots down the stretch in the fourth quarter of that game versus the Atlanta Hawks in game five. You're supposed to be the star. This is what the media keeps telling me. I just go off what people tell me. That's all. I got my own set of eyes. I can sit down and watch the game and come to a conclusion as to who can play and who can't play. I can make my own determination. But the media keeps telling the mass public who can play and who can't play. And the unfortunate part is the mass public buys into this shit. They believe it. They buy into it hook, line, and sinker. Oh, Giannis must be great. He's a two-time former league MVP. Oh, Ben Simmons must be awesome. He's a rookie of the year. He's on the All-NBA first-team defense. All that shit is meaningless to me at this point, because at this point, the NBA and pop culture in general, mainstream society, is descended into what my man Kwame Brown so aptly describes as the go-along, get-along gang. If the media likes you, you'll get awards, you'll get recognition, you'll get coverage. They'll tell everyone that you're great and this, that, and the third. I can look at the All-NBA teams and tell you that. Can we really say that LeBron James had a better NBA season in the year 2020 and 2021 than Jason Tatum did? Who was better this season, Donovan Mitchell or Jimmy Butler? Because Jimmy Butler made the All-NBA team. Donovan Mitchell didn't, but Donovan Mitchell had a better season than Jimmy Butler did. Jason Tatum was better at playing basketball this season than LeBron James was, but LeBron made an All-NBA team. Go along, get along, gang. If they like you, they'll promote you. They'll celebrate you. They'll put you on All-NBA teams, give you awards, this, that, and the third. That's why that shit don't mean nothing to me. That's why I don't understand when casual regular fans try to tell me that so-and-so is so great because they won X amount of awards. Who cares? Visually watch them play basketball and tell me what you see. When I look at Giannis Antetokounmpo, I see a glorified version of Stromile Swift. I see a guy who's a better athlete than he is a basketball player. However, in game six tonight versus Brooklyn, in what was obviously a must-win situation, down 3-2, he stepped his game up, put in 30 points, 12 of 20 shooting, 17 rebounds. He was awesome, primarily playing within 5 feet of the basket. That's how he should play. He shouldn't be floating around on the perimeter. You can't shoot. Why are you out there? He should be somewhere on the block. Preferably, he would develop a low post game. I've been waiting for that for Giannis for a couple of years now. He has yet to develop a low post game. But if you know your bread and butter, you know your strengths, is attacking the basket and getting dunks and layups and putbacks, then just do that all game. Don't even waste your time on the perimeter. Don't go out there. Just be somewhere near the close vicinity of the basket. It reminds me of the advice I used to give to people when I was in the United States Navy, and I had to train people on different functions and different aspects of the job, or working in aviation, or working on naval aircraft, on the aircraft carrier, on the flight deck. I used to tell people all the time, especially my trainees, don't do shit you don't know how to do. I say the same advice where I'm working at now, working in chemical production. I tell people all the time, don't do shit you don't know how to do. If you come across a fork in the road, don't go straight, don't go right, don't go left. Just fucking stand there. Don't do anything. I'd rather you do nothing than try to do something and fuck it up and potentially kill yourself or kill someone else. Don't do shit you don't know how to do. I apply that same advice to Giannis Antetokounmpo on the basketball court. If you know you can't shoot threes, if you know you can barely dribble, don't even try. Don't do shit you don't know how to do. Just play close to the rim and get dunks and get easy putbacks and layups or some quick hook shots or a floater somewhere within 5 to 8 feet of the basket. Don't attempt a shot outside the paint. You can't shoot. Every shot should take place inside the paint. And you'll be better off for it. Like I said, tonight, 30 points, 12 of 20 shooting, 17 rebounds. Efficient game. Clean game, and they won, and they forced the game seven. So that's all about players who are currently active in the NBA playoffs. I want to get to two players who are not in the playoffs right now. One was in the playoffs, but he lost in the first round. The other one's team failed to make it, and as a result, his coach got fired. Luka Doncic from the Dallas Mavericks and Zion Williamson from the New Orleans Pelicans, two guys the NBA is banking on to be the faces and future of the National Basketball Association. Zion has been in the league 2 years and has already had two different coaches. Next season, he will have his third different coach. He had Alvin Gentry his rookie season. He had Stan Van Gundy this season. There are reports out of New Orleans about Zion and his family being unhappy with the overall direction of the New Orleans Pelicans and the way things are going down there, and he may want to leave. That's not shocking to anybody. That's not a news flash. Did anyone honestly believe that Zion Williamson was going to play his entire career in New Orleans? I give Zion to the end of his rookie contract, and then he will be either in New York, Brooklyn, or Los Angeles, Miami, somewhere bigger, Chicago maybe, somewhere bigger, somewhere with more exposure, somewhere where he can extend and further his brand a little bit more, because you can only go but so far in New Orleans. No disrespect to New Orleans and the people down there. I've never been down there. I got no problem with New Orleans. I'm just talking from a basketball player standpoint. I'm talking about the way the NBA typically goes. Players typically want to go play in bigger cities to expand their profile. Like I said earlier, the NBA is a business. And there's only so much business you can do in New Orleans. You can do more business in New York, LA, or Chicago, or Miami than you can in New Orleans. That's the only place this is coming from. No disrespect to the Pelicans organization or the city of New Orleans. I'm just saying, a guy like Zion Williamson, who the league wants to be the face of the NBA, I don't see him being the face of the NBA playing in New Orleans. He will be playing somewhere else in about two more years. Luka Doncic in Dallas, same thing. I don't see him being the face of the NBA playing for the Dallas Mavericks. Now, some people can hear this and they can try to rebuttal that and say, well, what about LeBron? He was the face of the NBA playing in Cleveland. LeBron's a different entity. LeBron is more charismatic than both Zion and Luka. LeBron is more personality. LeBron was a child prodigy. I mean, you can say the same thing about Zion, too, and Luka as well, because Luka was playing against grown men over in Slovenia. But that's in Slovenia. Americans didn't see that. So LeBron, to me, the reason why LeBron's bigger than Zion, because Zion's always being compared to LeBron. You can't be bigger than the person you're always being compared to. The same way LeBron can never overtake Jordan, because he's always being compared to him. If you're being compared to someone, that person's always going to be above you. That's just the way it is. And you also had the story of LeBron being a hometown kid, growing up in nearby Akron, playing for the Cleveland Cavaliers. You know, LeBron from day one was sold as the hometown kid who's going to be the savior of the franchise. You can't say that about Zion. Zion grew up in South Carolina. That's not New Orleans. It's the South, but it's not New Orleans. So you can't sell people on Zion being the hometown savior because he's not from New Orleans and South Carolina doesn't even have a basketball team. So with LeBron, it was just more of a story you could tell with him being the hometown savior and being a child prodigy and being the anointed face of the NBA since he was 15 on the cover of Sports Illustrated playing for St. Vincent, St. Mary. And he had more charisma, as I said. There was just more things to talk about with LeBron than there is with Zion and with Luka. So for those two, it doesn't surprise me to hear the type of things I'm hearing where both men are having animosity and friction with the teams that drafted them, because quite frankly, I don't expect either one of them to re-sign with Dallas and New Orleans respectively. I don't expect either one of them to finish their careers with the teams that drafted them. I fully expect them to leave and go somewhere else to greener pastures in the next coming years where they can make more money and take better care of themselves and have a higher profile and be bigger stars and all that shit. So both Luka and Zion are upset in their respective teams. They also are currently without coaches. Rick Carlisle, the coach of the Dallas Mavericks for over a decade, stepped down today. Stan Van Gundy was fired about a day or two ago. So now there are eight teams with head coaching vacancies. The Dallas Mavericks, the Portland Trail Blazers, the New Orleans Pelicans, the Boston Celtics, the Washington Wizards, the Indiana Pacers, the Orlando Magic. I will speak about the Trailblazers first. Terry Stotts was let go about a week and a half ago. One of the rumored names to be the next head coach of the Portland Trailblazers is Mike D'Antoni. At some point, do we get tired of recycling people? At some point, do we get tired of seeing white privilege? How many teams is Mike D'Antoni going to be allowed to coach? He's been with Phoenix. He's been with the LA Lakers. He's been with the New York Knicks. He's been with the Houston Rockets. He's currently an assistant coach in the Brooklyn Nets, and he's being talked about being brought in to coach the Portland Trailblazers. Terry Stotts was always known as an offensive-minded coach, and his teams don't play defense. So naturally, you fire him, and you bring in another coach who's known for being a great offensive mind who doesn't give a fuck about defense. What kind of sense does that make? You could bring in Mike D'Antoni to the Portland Trail Blazers. I'm telling you right now, every player over 6 feet 8 inches tall will be traded. Nurkic is out of there. Portland's going to play an up-and-down, run-and-gun, fast-paced, up-tempo style of basketball. Dame Lillard is going to average about 35 points a game next season. The Portland Trail Blazers are going to make the playoffs and lose in the second round like they already do now. So what's the point of bringing in Mike D'Antoni to replace Terry Stotts? Garbage in, garbage out. That's how I look at it. It's the same dude. Neither one of them coach defense. Neither one of them can get past the Western Conference playoffs and get to the NBA Finals. And neither one of them are worth being on an NBA team as a coach. How many opportunities does D'Antoni need? I just outlined five of them. Phoenix, LA, Knicks, Houston, potentially Portland. How many shots do you need? In Boston, Brad Stevens was relieved of his duties to step down as the head coach of the Boston Celtics and then was promoted and given the job as the president of basketball operations the same day. I've never seen anything like that before. I've never seen someone get fired and promoted at the same time. That's privilege. It must be white. No brother could ever get fired and promoted at the exact same time with the same organization. I was flabbergasted when I saw that. Brad Stevens got fired and promoted the same fucking day. That's incredible. On a positive note, as far as NBA coaches are concerned, we have seven teams currently remaining in the NBA playoffs. The Phoenix Suns, the first team to advance to the conference final, disposing of the Denver Nuggets in four games. The Milwaukee Bucks, the Brooklyn Nets, the Atlanta Hawks, the Philadelphia 76ers, the Utah Jazz, and the LA Clippers. Of those seven teams, four of them are being coached by black head coaches. Nate McMillan, coaching the Atlanta Hawks. Tyronn Lue, head coach of the LA Clippers. Doc Rivers, head coach of the Philadelphia 76ers. And Monty Williams, head coach of the Phoenix Suns. So salute to all four of those brothers. It's good to see. Always good to see black folks being successful. In the ideal world, we end up with a matchup where you have two black coaches going against each other in the NBA Finals. Off the top of my head, I don't think that's ever happened before, where you had two black coaches in the NBA Finals. I have to research that and look it up. But it'd be cool to see, like, I don't know, Nate McMillan and the Atlanta Hawks going up against Monty Williams and the Phoenix Suns. There's also new blood. We've had a lot of that in the NBA playoffs this year. Of all the teams, the seven teams that are remaining, the only teams that have actually won championships before, the Hawks back in 1958 as the St. Louis Hawks, the Philadelphia 76ers back in 83, the 4-4-4 Sixers with Moses Malone and Dr. J and Maurice Cheeks, and the Milwaukee Bucks, who last won a title in 1974, I want to say, when they had Lew Alcindor, a.k.a. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Oscar Robertson. So it's been a long time for the three teams who have won who are still playing in the NBA playoffs. And then you have the Utah Jazz, the Brooklyn Nets, the LA Clippers, who have never won a championship, and the Phoenix Suns. Those four teams have never won a championship. So this year, you know, we've grown accustomed over the years to kind of seeing the same people in the NBA Finals. LeBron, Curry, Kobe Bryant going back a long time ago, going back a decade ago. Tim Duncan for a lot of years. Unless the Clippers get to the finals and unless Kawhi can come back healthy, you're not going to see a familiar face in this year's NBA Finals. Or unless Brooklyn gets there with Kevin Durant, because he was there for 2 years with Golden State. But other than that, like I said, if we get that Phoenix-Atlanta NBA Final, that's fresh new blood in the NBA Finals. And to some people, that's a good thing. To the NBA, to the people behind the machine, they're probably not too happy about this. If the NBA, if Adam Silver really could rig this and come out with the outcome he wants to see, if he really had it his way, it'd be a Brooklyn Nets-LA Clipper NBA Final. Because you still have the two biggest media markets, LA and New York. Oddly enough, you had the two secondary teams in those markets, the Clippers and the Nets. Because those two markets forever have been known as, you know, New York City is Knicks territory and Los Angeles belongs to the Lakers. But it would still be LA versus New York, which would be big numbers and probably big ratings for the league, especially given the star power. If everyone can make it there in one piece and remain healthy or get healthy, if you had Kawhi Leonard and Paul George going up against Kevin Durant and James Harden and Kyrie Irving, that'd be good for the league. Me personally, I got no dog in this fight. The Lakers are out. I don't care who wins. Like I said, I want Brooklyn and Atlanta to at least get to the conference final because I don't want to see unskilled basketball players playing in the conference final. As far as the West is concerned, as long as Utah don't make it, because I don't give a fuck about the Utah Jazz. It can be Phoenix. It can be the Clippers. Either way, it doesn't matter to me. I just root for good basketball. I root for good health. Hopefully, you know, if you're a superstitious, if you believe in such a thing, knock on wood, no more injuries, especially no more injuries to star players. Hopefully, Kawhi Leonard's knee is not that serious. He can get back on the court, You know, people will ask me from time to time, you know, you're a Laker fan. How can you root for the Clippers? Well, other than Zubac and Kennard, the whole team is black. So I root for brothers. And Kawhi Leonard, other than Stephen Curry, is my favorite player in the league. So I don't give a fuck. They ever won a championship. To me, the Clippers are no threat to the Lakers. The Lakers are the Lakers. They own that town. They own that building. They own Southern California. They own the NBA for the most part. If the Clippers want to sneak in and get one championship, I don't care. They're still not a threat to the Lakers. I don't give a fuck what they do. They didn't beat the Lakers in the playoffs to get there. So fuck it. They go all the way, they go all the way. I like PG. I like Kawhi Leonard. They got a black coach. I root for the Clippers. Like I said, other than two guys, pretty much the entire roster is all brothers. So I hope you've been enjoying the NBA playoffs, and I hope you've been enjoying the Deion Gordon podcast. I appreciate the outpouring of support and appreciation, and all the kind words, and all the people who say they're loyal listeners and fans, all the people giving me encouragement. Appreciate every listen. Once again, always humble, very much appreciative, very much grateful, eternally grateful, and very thankful to have a platform that I've created for myself and that people actually listen to and fuck with and support. So once again, thank you. Salute to everyone who listens to the Deion Gordon podcast. Nothing but love and respect for everybody out there. Picture me rolling. I'm out.